Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 3rd of February 2026. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Di Shaw and Rosemary Shergold and recorded at home by Judith Piggott and Rosemary Shergold. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:41 a.m. and sunset is at 4:57 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events, births and deaths from February the 3rd in history. In 1653, French Chief Minister Cardinal Mazarin made a triumphant return to Paris from exile. Mazarin was first minister of French kings Louis XIII and Louis XIV, and Mazarin acted as the head of the government for Anne of Austria, the regent for the young Louis XIV. He was also responsible for the king's education until he came of age. Their exile in Germany came about following two major uprisings in Paris. In 1863, Samuel Langhall Clemens first used the pen name Mark Twain in a Virginia City newspaper called the Territorial Enterprise. He went on to pen several novels under this name, including The Adventures of Tom Sawyer in 1876 and its sequel, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, in 1884. In 1882, circus owner P.T. Barnum bought his world-famous elephant Jumbo from London Zoo, despite much public protest. Jumbo was a male African bush elephant born in Sudan. He was exported to Jardin des Plantes of Zoo in Paris before being transferred to London Zoo in 1865. Jumbo was killed while being led to his train boxcar when a train came down the track and hit him. The elephant's name spawned the common word jumbo, meaning large in size. In 1959, the plane crash known as the Day the Music Died killed musicians Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, Giles Perry Richardson, aka the Big Bopper, and the pilot near Clear Lake, Iowa. In 1989, British Telecom banned chat lines because of what was known as the chat line junkie problem. The company had been criticised following the widely reported case of a woman whose 12-year-old son landed her a chat line bill of £6,000. Births on this day. In 1809, Felix Mendelssohn, German composer, pianist, organist and conductor of the early Romantic period, was born in the free imperial city of Hamburg in Germany. His most famous works include A Midsummer Night's Dream Incidental Music, featuring the renowned Wedding March, the Violin Concerto in E Minor, and the Italian No. 4 and Scottish No. 3 symphonies. In 1830, Robert Gascoigne Cecil, 3rd Marquess of Salisbury, Conservative Prime Minister, was born in Hatfield, England. He was British Prime Minister three times, between 1885 and 86, from 1886 to 92, and 1895 to 1902. In 1906, George Alexander Graham Adamson, MBE, British wildlife conservationist, was born in Etawa, India. Adamson was known as Baba Ya Simba in Swahili, which means father of lions. His wife Joy Adamson related in her best-selling 1960 book Born Free their life with Elsa the lioness, an orphaned cub they raised and later released into the wild. In 1914, George Nissen, American inventor and creator of the trampoline, was born in Blairstown, Iowa. He trademarked the word trampoline after hearing the word trampolin while in Mexico, which means springboard in Spanish. In the world of entertainment, there were several notable births on this day. In 1927, Val Dunican, born Michael Valentine, Irish singer and entertainer, was born in Waterford, Ireland. In 1928, Frankie Vaughan, CBE, DL, born Frank Fruim Abelson, English singer, was born in Liverpool. He made more than 80 recordings in his lifetime and was known as Mr. Moonlight after one of his early hits. In 1947, Dave Davis, British rock guitarist and vocalist with the Kinks, was born in Muswell Hill, North London. In 1956, Nathan Lane, American actor, was born in Jersey City. In 1970, Warwick Davis, English actor, famous for the film Willow and for playing Professor Flitwick in the Harry Potter films, was born in Epsom, England. In 1980, Elmo, Muppet character on children's TV show Sesame Street, was born at the Sesame Workshop in New York City. And in 1995, Amy Lou Wood, British actress, best known for Sex Education, The White Lotus and Daddy Issues, was born in Stockport. And deaths on this day. In 1014, Swain Forkbeard, son of Harald Bluetooth and Viking King of Denmark, Norway and England, died in Gainsborough, Lincolnshire. He was proclaimed King of England on Christmas Day 1013, making him England's shortest reigning king with a reign of just 40 days. The Viking King ruled England from a fortification on the site of what is now Gainsborough Old Hall, one of the best preserved medieval manor houses in England. In 1399, John of Gaunt, English son of King Edward III, 1st Duke of Lancaster, died aged 58 at Leicester Castle. Gaunt was a statesman and founder of the English Royal House of Lancaster. He was the father of Henry Bolingbroke, later King Henry IV, who usurped the English crown from King Richard II. Students of English literature are likely to be familiar with Gaunt's famous speech from the Shakespeare play Richard II, here performed by Sir John Gielgud from a BBC production in 1978.
This royal throne of kings, this sceptred isle, this earth of majesty, this seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for herself against infection on the hand of war, this happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in the silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall or as a moat defensive to one house against the envy of less happier lands, this blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, this nurse, this teeming womb of royal kings, feared by their breed and famous by their birth, renowned for their deeds as far from home, for Christian service and true chivalry, as is the sepulchre in stubborn jury of the world's ransom, blessed Mary's son. This land of such dear souls, this dear, dear land, dear for her reputation through the world, is now leased out. I die pronouncing it to a tenement or pelting farm, England bound in with a triumphant sea, whose rocky shore beats back the envious siege of watery Neptune, is now bound in with shame, with inky blots and rotten parchment bonds. That England that was wont to conquer others hath made a shameful conquest of itself. Ah, would the scandal vanish with my life? How happy then were my ensuing death.
In 1468, Johannes Gutenberg, German inventor of the movable type printing press, died aged about 70, probably in Mainz, Germany, although his grave is now lost. And in the world of entertainment, in 1999, Gwen Guthrie, American singer most famous for Ain't Nothing Going On But The Rent, died of cancer, aged 48. In 2004, Cornelius Bumpus, American saxophonist and keyboardist with the Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan, died of a heart attack, aged 58. In 2020, Gene Reynolds, American actor, screenwriter, director, and co-producer of the TV series MASH, died aged 96. In 2021, Jim Weatherly, American pop and country music songwriter, most famous for Midnight Train to Georgia, died aged 77. And now on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles.
Baroque wigs have mysteriously appeared on landmarks across Oxford. Wigs have been spotted on statues and landmarks around the city, including the bronze statue of William Herbert, 3rd Earl of Pembroke, at the Bodleian Library, and various locations around the UNESCO World Heritage Site, Blenheim Palace. The unusual site is part of a tribute ahead of a new exhibition at Blenheim Palace titled Blueprints of Power. It will run from the 14th of February to the 10th of April and promises an immersive journey through the life of Sir John Vanbrugh, 1664 to 1726, dubbed the rock star of the English Baroque. The exhibit promises visual displays, archival material, period costumes and stories that bring Vanbrugh's world to life. Visitors will be able to step back in time and discover how one of the most prominent architects and his ties to high society helped to define an age. The Blueprints of Power exhibition is part of Vanbrugh 300, a nationwide celebration coordinated by the Georgian Group. However, this news item brings to mind the short satirical verse written by Vanbrugh's contemporary, the poet Alexander Pope, 1688 to 1744. Upon the Duke of Marlborough's house at Woodstock. See, sir, here's the grand approach. This way is for his grace's coach. There lies the bridge, and here's the clock. Observe the lion and the cock, the spacious court, the colonnade, and mark how wide the hall is made. The chimneys are so well designed, they never smoke in any wind. This gallery's contrived for walking, the windows to retire and talk in, the council chamber for debate, and all the rest are rooms of state. Thanks, sir, cried I. 'Tis very fine, but where'd you sleep? Or where'd you dine? I find by all you have been telling, 'tis a house, but not a dwelling.
A well-known fish and chip shop is up for a major UK award, with the ceremony fast approaching. Already in the running for the best takeaway in the country prize, Harrison's Fish and Chips in Elms Parade, Botley, has now been shortlisted in the menu innovation category. It is nominated alongside Fish and Fright in Bristol and Knight's Fish Restaurant in Glastonbury, with the winner to be announced at the National Fish and Chips Awards ceremony on February 25th at the Park Plaza Westminster Bridge in London. The president of the National Federation of Fish Fryers, Andrew Crook, said, "Business owners have a shifting landscape, high customer expectations, and a diverse dietary preferences to consider and manage. So it's a fine balance to devise a menu which ultimately satisfies the requirements. It takes a touch of genius to be able to develop an offering that has longevity and respects the heritage and customs of the fish and chip craft while reimagining it so it's inclusive to different tastes and budgets." Ryan Harrison of the Oxford Shop said that adding a variety of alternate species to its menu, including saithe, hoki and Cornish sea bass, have been key to its success. He added, "By using Cornish caught fish, we're proud to be supporting the UK fishing industry while offering a menu that meets everybody's needs. The UK's best takeaway will also be decided at the February awards ceremony, with Mr. Harrison highlighting that it's the shop's first time reaching the shortlist and the first from Oxfordshire." The Ellison Institute has lodged plans to convert two buildings within a historic former hospital in Oxford into a restaurant. The chapel and lodge on Armstrong Road in Littlemore will be turned into a restaurant, which will be open to the public as well as serving the science park. The proposals were submitted by Ellison Oxford Limited, who are building the Ellison Institute of Technology, a science and innovation campus at Oxford Science Park. The buildings were once part of the former Littlemore Hospital site, which was one of the first mental health institutions built in the country. Both of them are now used as office space, with the chapel being used by Lang O'Rourke, who are building the Ellison Institute, and the lodge being used by Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire Wildlife Trust. Under the plans, the buildings would be refurbished, and a new conservatory and interconnecting walkway would be installed. Councillor David Henwood, who represents Littlemore on the County Council, said he was pleased the area would get a new restaurant, and he hoped it would be both affordable and accessible to the local community. He added, "The proposal for a publicly accessible ground floor, operating from morning to evening, with a focus on seasonal lunches, is particularly positive. However, Littlemore is an area of high deprivation, and it's essential that the Institute give careful consideration to both accessibility and affordability so that local residents can genuinely benefit from the development." The design and access statement says there will be capacity for 150 guests at both buildings, and car parking spaces would be reduced from 42 to 24. Mr. Henwood said on-street parking in the area was also limited. He added, "It is also likely that the community infrastructure levy, CIL, receipts will be generated from this development. Currently, new developments within the vicinity of the station are expected to contribute towards the Cowley branch line. Many Littlemore residents feel this is unfair, as CIL receipts generated in Littlemore should be used to improve existing facilities within Littlemore rather than being directed towards a transport scheme that some residents may not be able to afford to use. I believe these funds would be better invested in improving local infrastructure, including much-needed repairs to the Littlemore Community Centre, where the roof has been leaking in the main hall for over 3 years. Larry Ellison, who is the fifth richest man in the world, is a significant investor in the city. The Institute brought the Eagle and Child pub in the city centre for around £8 million, with plans to refurbish it and reopen it in 2027. A new flagship cafe is to open inside the Big Red Building in North Oxford that can be seen from the A34. Taylor's, Oxford's renowned gourmet sandwich and deli company, has announced plans to open at Oxford North, the city's recently launched Global Innovation District. Taylor's Oxford North will be part of the development's first phase, which brings together offices and laboratories, new homes, public parks and facilities. It will be on the ground floor of the Red Hall, Oxford North's landmark hub for science and innovation startups and small and medium-sized enterprises. The new 80-seater cafe will offer both indoor and outdoor seating, with views across Falaise Park, the 2-acre landscape public park, and Oliver Eliasson's illuminated Your Planetary Assembly sculptures. Alongside its menu of sandwiches, salads, freshly made pasta, delicacies and specialty coffees, Taylor will also provide catering services for meetings and events. Due to open on the 2nd of March, Taylor's Oxford North will join Taylor's existing 8 sites across the city. Initial opening hours will be Monday to Friday from 7:30 to 3, with plans to extend opening times as the district grows. The new cafe will take Taylor's locally employed team to more than 100 people. Jory Vahala, chief executive at Taylor's, said, "In what is our fourth decade of operating, we're thrilled to be bringing Taylor's to Oxford North. This will be our 9th cafe and a flagship for our brand, with stunning interiors and welcoming views. Oxford North is an exciting new place that aligns perfectly with our commitment to community, sustainability and great coffee and food. We can't wait to welcome our new customers when we open." Simon Ruck, Managing Director at Oxford North, added, "We're all about working with local businesses, and so for Taylor's to be partnering as our new cafe operator is great news for everybody. We have shared values in relation to quality, value, exceptional service and community. Taylor's focus on local sourcing and creating welcoming spaces, along with its much-loved wide-ranging menu, will add real vibrancy to the new district and be a benefit for the companies based here, as well as those people living locally and visiting." Oxford North is being delivered by Oxford North Ventures, the joint venture company of Thomas White Oxford, the development company of St John's College, Ontario Teachers' Pension Plan and Stanhope.
An Oxford courier service that used cycling as a way of delivering has ceased business after nearly 14 years. Pedal and Post has shut its operations in Oxford and the recently expanded London, Chief Executive and founder Christopher Benton said, with the heaviest of hearts. During his time, the Osney Mead industrial estate-based business had the backing of six Oxford University colleges to deliver its parcels via bike rather than van. It won Sustainable Medium Business of the Year at the Oxford Climate Awards and during the summer launched in the capital city. A total of 60 people, including a mix of employed and self-employed team members across Oxford and London, have lost their jobs as the company ceases trading. Mr. Benton said the company lost a major client earlier this year. He added, despite exploring every possible avenue to continue and truly exhausting all options, we have reached the point where we can no longer sustain the business. We want to take a moment to thank everyone who has supported Pedal and Post over the years, our clients, partners, riders, staff, and the wider community who believed in what we were trying to achieve. Your support meant everything. Since our founding, Pedal and Post has worked tirelessly to show that cargo bike deliveries are not just possible, but practical, sustainable, and better for cities. Over 14 years, we've helped remove countless vans from urban roads, reduced emissions, and shown that a people-powered delivery model can deliver excellent service while putting cities first. While this chapter has come to a close, we firmly believe this is not the end for cargo bike logistics. The landscape today looks very different to when we started, and major carriers have been investing in low-carbon, bike-based urban delivery models, and the cargo bikes themselves being worlds apart from when we started as early adopters. We're proud to have been part of that shift and to have helped pave the way. Thank you once again for being part of our story and for helping us imagine and build cities that feel fit for the future. In 2022, Pedal and Post took part in Oxford City Council's first cargo bike trial scheme, supporting covered market traders in the testing and adoption of sustainable deliveries. During the COVID pandemic, the business launched a local Oxford supermarket to transport groceries from businesses to residents in the city. It also helped Oxford University Hospitals halve NHS delivery times of chemotherapy drugs. A residential street in Oxford is set to close for 10 weeks for roadworks as an aged gas main is due to be replaced. White House Road in South Oxford will be shut to all traffic except residents' access from the 2nd of February for approximately 10 weeks. Utility company SGN will be replacing a gas main. It will be replaced with a new pipe running parallel to White House Road, with the old main to be sealed off and decommissioned. A temporary traffic order was granted by Oxfordshire County Council to the gas company for the period covering 5th of January to the 22nd of May 2026. A 24-hour daily road closure was granted to prohibit any vehicle proceeding in the length of the White House Road from the junction of Marlborough Road to the junction of Long Ford Close. It specified that the order would remain in force for up to 18 months or until the work is completed, whichever is the sooner. City Councillor Anna Railton said, she had been informed the upcoming gas works would be for 2.5 months and involve one lane access only for residents and a suspension of all street parking.
With Oxford United fans experience a couple of goalless draws of late, Looking back at a theatrical 9-goal thrashing feels quite refreshing. The Ewes drew 0-0 with both Bristol City and Queen Park Rangers in Matt Bloomfield's first two games in charge, although could have won both before a big 2-1 victory over Leicester City last time out. 4 years ago, however, Yellows supporters were raving about a very different result. On January 29th, 2022, Oxford travelled to Gillingham and put on a show in a 7-2 thrashing of the hosts. A quartet of penalties, hopefully you haven't forgotten what none of those are, from Cameron Brannigan, meant that the skipper stole the applause, with strikes from Billy Bowden, Matty Taylor and Anthony Ford complementing the spot kicks. Carl Robinson's Ewes travelled to the Gillingham side, who went on to be relegated on goal difference, while Oxford finished 8th, 7 points off the top 6. United scored the first 3 goals inside 20 minutes at Pressfield Stadium, Bowden bagging the first after just 8 minutes. A foul 4 minutes later saw Brannigan convert the first spot kick of the day before a Taylor header made it 3. 3 up at the break, the captain won a penalty himself early in the second half, which he again scored before securing his first career hat-trick 7 minutes later with a 3rd penalty. Danny Lloyd pulled one back for the Gills before a handball saw Brannigan send the goalkeeper, Pontus Dahlberg, the wrong way for a staggering 4th time. Another consolation came through Robbie McKenzie before Ford put the icing on the cake with a late 7th goal. With 4 from the spot, it's believed that Brannigan is the only player in EFL history to score 4 penalties in 1 match, something that is unfathomable at present, with Oxford not having been awarded a penalty for almost 2 years. Their last spot kick came in League One playoff semi-final second leg, which was of course netted by Brannigan. That was 631 days and 3 United managers ago. The win was the first time the Ewes had scored 7 in a game since the 1965, when they beat Walsall 7-1 at the Old Manor Ground in Division 3. Who knows when we'll see a scoreline as staggering as this one, which is exactly why the 9-goal annihilation continues to live on in memory. Raymond Blanc has given his approval after Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons hired his successor. The Great Milton Restaurant and Hotel began its temporary closure at the start of January, with renovations and refurbishment set to take place. Le Manoir was originally started by celebrity chef Monsieur Blanc in 1984, and the now Belmond-owned spot has been one of the UK's most cherished. The 2 Michelin-starred restaurant is set to open in the summer of 2027, but with several changes, including with the staff behind the scenes. They include Arnaud Donclay, who was appointed as new culinary director. The Frenchman is currently in charge of 2 of France's most decorated restaurants, with both La Vague d'Or in Saint-Tropez and Plenitude at Cheval Blanc Paris awarded 3 Michelin stars. Mr. Blanc said on his successor, "Arnaud is an artist, an alchemist and a deeply thoughtful chef whose values align perfectly with the spirit of Le Manoir. I could not imagine a more fitting person to continue this journey." Monsieur Doncollet said, "To bring my cuisine to the UK for the first time at a place as magical and meaningful as Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons is a profound honour."
Here is the police commissioner's statement about the police budget for the coming year. Policing budget. "My priorities for Thames Valley Police are to cut crime and catch criminals. As your police and crime commissioner, it's my responsibility to ensure that Thames Valley Police has sufficient resources to effectively prevent and investigate crime, support victims, and protect communities. Setting the policing budget remains a complex process of balancing priorities, and this budget has been particularly difficult. Last month, the government announced the police funding settlement, which for Thames Valley Police was £9 million. less than expected. The funding from central government barely covers the costs of inflation and pay increases. And in a further announcement just days before setting the budget, the Home Office made clear that they would only fund around 40% of the cost of new officers. This puts more pressure on local taxpayers and it will impact the health of the force's finances in the long term. The budget for Thames Valley Police will be £622 million, with almost half of that funding having to be provided by local council taxpayers. The increase of £15 a year in council tax, based on a Band D property, will provide essential funding to enable Thames Valley Police to continue to deliver the best service possible to its communities. I am acutely aware of the financial pressures households are under. However, due to this challenging economic environment, I have made the decision to increase council tax contributions by 29p per week for Band D property. This increase will ensure the force can maintain policing levels, keep communities safe, and address the policing priorities of residents identified through my ongoing local crime survey. The force continues to make productivity and efficiency improvements in order to balance the local policing budget. With £15 million of savings delivered over the last year and a further £18.4 million of savings planned over the coming 4 years. Despite these financial pressures, I am determined that our local police force will continue to grow to support our community. Thames Valley Police will deliver 53 more neighbourhood police officers this coming year, on top of the 218 extra officers delivered in the last 3 years. Matthew Barber, Police and Crime Commissioner for Thames Valley.
Thames Valley Police Chief Constable Jason Hogg is cautiously optimistic about the government's plan to reform policing in the UK. Mr. Hogg said, "There is too much complexity within policing, which is taking us away from fighting crime and protecting communities." The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, announced a wave of new measures the government wants to introduce to reform police forces. A white paper seeks also to create a British FBI called the National Police Service and drastically cut the number of police forces across the country. Thames Valley Police is the largest non-metropolitan police force in England and Wales, covering Oxfordshire, Buckinghamshire and Berkshire. Mr. Hogg said, "I believe there's too much complexity and duplication of effort within policing, which is taking us away from what we are here to do, to protect our communities by fighting crime, serving victims and building trust. For this reason, I am cautiously optimistic about the proposed plans. We need to remove barriers, improve consistency and make sure we have the tools we need to meet modern challenges. Criminality is constantly evolving, which means so does policing. Thames Valley Police is no danger to innovation. It's part of our DNA. Several initiatives that were born in our force have been rolled out nationally as best practice. For example, to prevent knife crime, tackle violence against women and girls, and use generative AI virtual assistant Bobby to improve public contact. For the people who work in policing, serving tirelessly to make a real difference in our communities, the idea of change in the coming years is no doubt daunting. I'll be working closely with other leaders in policing over the coming weeks and months to shape the plans as they develop. For our communities, the prospect of change may similarly feel uncertain. My message is one of reassurance. First and foremost, the excellent standard of service we strive to provide for our communities is non-negotiable. At a local level, this is business as usual for us. Whatever the structural changes, we remain committed to delivering visible, responsive, community-focused policing within the Thames Valley. Our focus is and remains on protecting our communities. Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner Matthew Barber said, "Scrapping local police forces and reducing the operational independence of chief constables has huge long-term implications. Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp added, the government's plan includes mandating the merger of police forces, and briefings over the weekend suggest a reduction from 43 down to 10 or 12. So a single police force might cover an area from Dover to Milton Keynes or from Penzance to Swindon.
Clarkson's Farm star Caleb Cooper's staggering net worth has been revealed after documents were filed at company's house. The 27-year-old farmhand from Chipping Norton rose to fame in the first season of the Amazon Prime show, which was released in 2021. Since then, the Oxfordshire star has appeared in all three subsequent series, including the fourth iteration, which was released earlier this year across May and June last year. Mr. Cooper has three children with his partner Taya, welcoming the birth of their son Ashton in September 2025. Now the staggering net worth of the star has been revealed by The Sun, relayed by the Daily Mail this week. The farmer reportedly made around £1 million last year, according to accounts recently filed at company's house. Of that, around £800,000 came from his media and TV work, but a further £100,000 was raised from meat sales by his Cooper Livestock Limited products. Merchandise then made Mr. Cooper an extra £60,000 via K. Cooper Retail Limited, with the sales of rugby shorts, hoodies and shirts, which range in price from £32 to £60. Another £85,000 was sourced from his various farming and contracting work in and around Oxfordshire and beyond. Mr. Cooper had previously outlined plans to spend his earnings on his own farm at some point, with it also listed on his to-do list for 2026, which he shared on Instagram. Meanwhile, TV presenter Adam Henson has said he's probably not as Marmite a character as fellow celebrity farmer Jeremy Clarkson. Adam Henson, who lives on the Cotswolds Farm Park estate with his wife Charlie, has hosted the BBC Popular's Country File programme since 2001. He has several celebrity neighbours in the Cotswolds, with the likes of former Top Gear presenter Jeremy Clarkson residing nearby. Now the 60-year-old has taken a fresh swipe at the former Grand Tour host while recently appearing on the Farm ED podcast. Host Alex Dye asked the TV presenter how he thinks the general farmer perceives him and whether he believes that he is a Marmite sort of character. With the question as to whether people either love him or hate him lingering, it prompted Mr. Henson to reveal a similarity between him and Mr. Clarkson, accompanied by a subtle dig. The 60-year-old candidly replied, "Yeah, completely. Probably not as Marmite as Jeremy Clarkson, but I am quite Marmite, I think. Because I work for Country File and have done for 24 years, we are a magazine show and that has a whole array of topics. And we're a countryside show, not a farming show. It used to be the farming programme and farmers watching it get frustrated that we're not robust enough in some of our communication about farming. The technology, the finances, the struggles, and we're not championing British farming enough."
A cut-price coach service between Oxford and Gatwick and Heathrow airports has been announced as part of a long-distance network connecting the city. Flixbus, a global travel tech company, has added Oxford to its list of long-distance city destinations in the UK, adding coach services connecting to Birmingham, Heathrow and Gatwick airports daily. The network edition will launch from February the 5th and tickets will start from £4.99. Flixbus Vice President for West Europe, Andrea Schorling, commented, "Airport services are a clear customer favourite and enhancing airport services is a core element of our growth plans this year. We're now offering a great value coach travel for the city of Oxford, a truly exciting moment of expansion for our network. The route is being launched as part of a partnership expansion between Flixbus and independent coach hire company Prospect Coaches, starting from this year.
A dad left paralysed after a motorcycle crash has regained independence with the help of a life-changing companion. Paul Jacob from Wantage was 21 years old when a motorcycle crash left him with a devastating spinal injury. He spent 4 months at Stoke Mandeville Hospital's National Spinal Injury Centre before being allowed to return home in a wheelchair. Now a 42-year-old father of two, Mr. Jacob has rebuilt his life with help from Cassie, a black Labrador, trained by the national charity Support Dogs, to be a disability assistance dog. He said, "To go from being fairly active to being in a wheelchair was quite the change. When you go from able-bodied to disabled, going outside on your own can be quite scary at first, not knowing if you're going to get into a situation, such as falling out of your wheelchair. It becomes quite anxious. But to have a dog with you relieves that anxiety of being on your own." He added, "Life would be a lot more difficult without Cassie, physically and probably emotionally." Cassie was trained to help Mr. Jacob with daily tasks, boosting his independence and enabling him to enjoy family life more fully. Mr. Jacob said, "I struggle sitting in a chair trying to reach the ground and don't have the use of my stomach muscles, so balance for me is quite difficult. Cassie has been trained to pick up everything off the floor. I've got two young kids, so there are often lots of clothes and toys. As soon as you turn your back, it's all on the floor again." The specially trained Labrador also closes doors for Mr. Jacob and activates access buttons when they are out in public. Mr. Jacob continued, "Cassie will pick up my shoes, her toys, and she can even take clothes to the washing machine and help load the washing machine. She can also pull my socks and jacket off." Mr. Jacob, who is married to a 41-year-old midwife, Ida, retrained as a design engineer with his employer, Warburton Building Services, just 8 months after his accident, a job he still holds. He praised Support Dogs for the impact Cassie has had on his life. He said, "It's also about getting out and seeing people, and seeing Cassie in her Support Dog's jacket facilitates people asking how she helps me. I think it's amazing what the staff can teach a dog in such a short amount of time and how it affects people's lives. It helped me so much, I can only imagine what it has done for others." Support Dogs also train assistance dogs for autistic children and adults with epilepsy. The charity provides its services free of charge and relies on voluntary donations.
A Yorkshire firm has been given an £8 million contract to clear the huge Kidlington waste pile, which can be seen from the A34. Acumen Waste Services, based in Nottingley, Yorkshire, will remove the massive pile of rubbish near to the Oxfordshire village and the River Charwell. The contract is estimated to be worth £8 million, according to Channel 4, with no tender process held for the appointment and the money to be taken from the taxpayer. A spokesperson for the Environment Agency said, "Advice from Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service highlighted the site's fire risk and a potential effect one could have on the area." A spokesperson added, "Our priority is to remove the waste as quickly as possible, while maintaining a strong financial, environmental and operational oversight throughout." Acumen has worked with the Environment Agency before, including at Hodes Wood in Kent, where more than 30,000 tonnes of household and construction waste was dumped. The Environment Agency has estimated that 10,000 tonnes of illegal waste is at the Kidlington site, which was first closed in October when this newspaper broke the news of the dump. Later, the body declared a critical incident over the waste pile, which reached 12 metres in height. The spokesperson added, "Acumen will provide a full end-to-end waste management service, including site preparation, waste characterisation, segregation, safe handling, loading, transport, and disposal at appropriately permitted facilities. Earlier this month, the government's Environment Minister, Mary Cree, said that the clearance of the site is set to begin in February. Indeed, several damaged trees have already been removed to create access to the illegal waste, with the Environment Agency pledging to plant 2 trees for every one that is felled. Ms Cree added, "Early indications and scoping indicates that full clearance will take approximately 6 to 9 months. Though the taxpayer is footing the bill for the clear-up, the Environment Agency said it will be looking to claw money back. The spokesperson said that already the clean-up has been financed that does not replace the agency's long-held view that those shameless criminals dumping the waste shouldn't gain financially from it. The taxpayer shouldn't pay for the crimes of others," said the spokesperson. They added, "All costs are being rigorously reviewed and benchmarked against comparable competitive waste clearance projects. The Environment Agency has said that its investigation into the culprit is continuing." Callum Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, has been contacted for comment.
Oxford graduate and television chef Nigella Lawson will replace Dame Prue Leith as a judge on the Great British Bake Off. The cookbook author has the expertise, empathy and humour that are the perfect ingredients for the Bake Off tent, according to Channel 4 and production company Love Productions. Oxford University graduate Miss Lawson said in a statement, "I'm uncharacteristically rather lost for words right now. Of course it's daunting to be following in the footsteps of Prue Leith and Mary Berry before her. Great dames both, but I'm also bubbling with excitement. The Great British Bake Off is more than a television programme. It's a national treasure, and it's a huge honour to be entrusted with it. I'm just thrilled to be joining the team and all the new bakers to come. I wish the marvellous Prue all the best, and I'm giddily grateful for the opportunity." Fans have reacted to the news positively, with many racing to the comments section of the Great British Bake Off's announcement on X to share their well wishes. One fan said, "Brilliant news, Nigella will be excellent." Another commented, "Double entendre and viewing figures to skyrocket next series." Miss Lawson read Modern Languages at Oxford University's Lady Margaret Hall, edited the student magazine ISIS, later saving it from financial trouble, and graduated in 1979. A portrait of the food writer was then hung in the very same Oxford College, installed in 2018 to inspire students. Ian Katz, chief content officer at Channel 4, said, "We're incredibly excited about the marriage of two great British icons, Bake Off and Nigella. With Nigella joining the tent, Love Productions has created the dream team of British telly. Nigella brings an incomparable combination of warmth, expertise and sophistication to the tent. And this summer series will be as mouth-watering a prospect as her chocolate Guinness cake." Her first cookery book, How to Eat, became a bestseller, while her follow-up, How to Be a Domestic Goddess, described as the book that kick-started the cupcake revolution, was also hugely successful, winning her the British Book Award for Author of the Year in 2001. Ralph Lee, Chief Executive Officer of Love Productions, said, "We are all so delighted at Love Productions to welcome Nigella to the Great British Bake Off. Nigella is one of the most influential and beloved voices in food, with a tremendous passion for baking and a deep connection with audiences. Her warmth, wit and expertise make her a perfect fit for the tent, and we feel very fortunate to have her join the Bake Off team." The Great British Bake Off will air later this year.
Dame Prue Leith has broken her silence after Nigella Lawson replaced her on Channel 4's Great British Bake Off. It was announced last week that the 86-year-old, who lives in the Cotswolds, will bow out of the show after 9 series and after judging more than 400 challenges. She has been a judge on the popular baking show alongside Paul Hollywood since 2017, when the series moved from the BBC to Channel 4, replacing Henley resident Dame Mary Berry. It was then announced that Oxford University graduate Nigella Lawson will replace Dame Prue as a judge on the Bake Off. Reacting to the news of her replacement for the first time, the Cotswolds resident said, "I'm thrilled that Nigella is to experience the brilliant Bake Off. She's sassy, fun, and she knows her onions, her croissant, cake and crumble. Miss Lawson has the expertise, empathy and humour that are the perfect ingredients for the Bake Off tent," according to Channel 4 production company Love Productions. The 66-year-old said in a statement, "I'm uncharacteristically rather lost for words right now. Of course, it's daunting to be following in the footsteps of Prue Leith and Mary Berry before her, great dames both, but I'm also bubbling with excitement. The Great British Bake Off is more than a television programme, it's a national treasure, and it's a huge honour to be entrusted with it. I'm just thrilled to be joining the team and all the new bakers to come. I wish the marvellous Prue all the best, and I'm giddily grateful for the opportunity." People in Oxford are being invited to look at plans to transform County Hall into a sophisticated 4-star hotel. Developers Reef Origin, which previously converted the former Boswell's department store into the Store Hotel, will submit a planning application later this year to reinvent County Hall as a destination, celebrating Oxford's heritage while breathing new life into the West End. Oxfordshire County Council announced the sale of the site in autumn 2024 and plans to relocate to Speedwell House in the spring of 2027. The proposals will preserve and enhance the Grade 2 listed Old County Hall, transforming the former council chamber and coroner's court into restaurants and bars open to the public. The 1970s building will be sensitively converted into hotel accommodation, with a public rooftop terrace and bar offering panoramic views of Oxford's skyline, creating more than 100 jobs. Will Rolader, partner at Reef Origin, said, "County Hall is a landmark building with a rich history at the heart of Oxford's West End. Our vision is to celebrate that heritage while opening it up to the public in ways that were never possible before. This isn't just about creating a hotel. It's about activating a key site, creating jobs for local people, and giving the community and visitors alike a new way to experience this special building and its stunning views across the city. The proposed development aims to activate a key site on the busy corridor connecting Oxford City Centre to the railway station, contributing to the ongoing regeneration of the West End. The design prioritises public space, opening up areas of the historic site that were previously closed to the public, and creates external terraces. The hotel will use local suppliers and producers with a commitment to sourcing local produce. Grade 2 listed building Old County Hall was built in 1841, designed by architect John Plowman in Gothic Revival style, with castellated features to complement Oxford Castle. The modern County Hall building next to it was opened by the Queen in 1976 and serves as a headquarters for Oxfordshire County Council. Reef Origin is a global real estate, infrastructure and technology development and investment company with over £20 billion total enterprise value of projects across 5 key platforms. The company specialises in urban regeneration, focusing on transforming historic buildings, and was praised for its restoration design of the store, which honoured the heritage of the former department store. The County Hall project is commissioned by Legal & General, which bought the site from the County Council. The leader of Oxford City Council has condemned proposals to close fire stations in and around the city, arguing that the city is at unique risk due to its heritage buildings and planned new homes and labs. Oxfordshire County Council, which is responsible for the Fire and Rescue Service, has proposed a number of changes to the service and is giving residents and stakeholders the chance to have their say. One of the proposals includes removing the fire stations at Rewley Road and in Kidlington and merging them into a new station in North Oxford. Councillor Susan Brown gave a speech opposing the proposed closures at the start of the full council meeting, which took place in Oxford's Town Hall on January 26. She said the large number of students, HMOs, high-rise tower blocks, World Heritage sites and the growing number of lab spaces meant there was a specific need for a fire station in the city centre. She added, "We consider having a fire station centrally in the city is something that should be retained, unless there is evidence they improved the service offered to the city. This is not the case. The proposals explicitly say that response times will worsen." She went on to say that specialist services for dealing with issues with the waterways comes from Kidlington, and that they were concerned that the expertise would be broken up and spread thinly round the county. She also criticised the equality impact assessment, which outlines that response times will be worse for deprived communities in Oxford, but this would be offset by improving response times in rural areas. She said, "We do not support any reduction in the level of resource available to the city or its surround. The unique risk factors in Oxford mean the current response times and level of resource need to be maintained or improved, not downgraded." She said she met with the Chief Fire Officer, Rob McDougall, along with a Cabinet Member for a Safer Oxford, Lubna Arshad, to ask them directly about the proposals. The plans have faced backlash from the Fire Brigades Union and local politicians, who say it will lead to slower response times and leave communities vulnerable. Mr McDougall previously told this newspaper that the proposals aim to reallocate resources to improve cover for on-call firefighters during the day. Other stations that could be closed under the proposals include Ensham, Woodstock and Henley. The proposals also include creating five-day shift fire engines in Wallingford or Cromarsh, Farringdon, Whitney, Bicester and Chipping Norton. Introducing 12-hour shifts and would mean a minimum of 42 firefighters would be made redundant. No specific site has been proposed for the station in North Oxford. The consultation closes at the end of January and residents can have their say via Let's Talk Oxfordshire. Oxfordshire County Council has been approached for comment. On January 29, there were 15 flood alerts in place in Oxfordshire after days of continuous heavy rain as river levels remain high. The Environment Agency has issued or retained alerts for 15 different waterways within Oxfordshire, with several more in the areas immediately surrounding the county. Including rivers and streams just over the borders of Oxfordshire, there were a total of 35 alerts and one flood warning north of the county from Banbury, south of Stratford-upon-Avon, on the River Dean at Walton. The agency warned people to be prepared for flooding amid rising river levels and highly saturated ground following extensive rainfall. Lower-lying land and roads are expected to see some flooding and people are recommended to avoid them. Oxfordshire County Council advised people to drive carefully and said gritters would be out as a precaution. Thames Water has issued advice on the continuous wet weather and storm warnings in the area. Spells of heavy rain cause more surface runoff, overwhelmed drains and an increased risk of flooding. Flood alerts are in place for the River Charwell, Ray, Evenlode, Glyme, Windrush, Ock, Thames and Tame in Oxfordshire.
Flood alleviation work in Oxford will begin later this year and is expected to last until 2031, the Environment Agency has confirmed. The Oxford Flood Alleviation Scheme was first mooted in 2010 in the Oxford Strategy, which highlighted flood risks from rivers in the city. Oxford has a long history of flooding, with significant floods in recent decades, damaging homes and businesses, as well as closing the railway and major roads in the city. Planning consent was given in the summer, of 2024, but to date, no work has started on construction. This will change in late 2026, the Environment Agency says, but no specific date or month has been given. An agency spokesperson said, "The Oxford Flood Alleviation Scheme is the Environment Agency's major project to help protect homes, businesses and vital transport links in Oxford from flooding. The scheme will reduce flood risk to all properties in Oxford currently at risk of flooding from the River Thames. It is designed to reduce risks from major floods like the one in Oxford in 1947. We expect construction to start in late 2026 and it will take around 5 years. The new stream will run for approximately 5 kilometres from just north of Botley Road down to south of the A423 near Kennington, where it rejoins the River Thames. Most of this area is farmland and flood meadow. It will create over 20 hectares of wetland habitat and around 16 hectares of floodplain meadows. Over its lifetime, the scheme will save more than £1.6 billion by reducing flood damage and disruption, the agency predicts. In the meantime, plans are in place if flooding occurs again in Oxford. The agency spokesperson said, "At times of heightened flood risk, we deploy fully trained and competent staff to clear debris from watercourses and clear trash screens to keep rivers flowing. Our specialist teams work to deploy temporary flood barriers to protect properties such as those in Oxford Road, South Hinksey."
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
Confusion reigned at an Oxford theatre when an Inspector Morse show about strange goings-on within a fictional play was disrupted by a real-life emergency. The closing show of Inspector Morse, House of Ghosts, was cut short at the new theatre in George Street on Saturday night after an audience member is believed to have fallen ill. With some of the action in the play taking place in the theatre's auditorium, guests were left unsure whether the drama, in which the play was halted and the lights turned up, was part of the production or a real-life crisis. The cast left the stage before the theatre was evacuated. An audience member who wanted to remain anonymous said, "I think we were in the final scene of the play when there was a little bit of shouting for the audience. That had happened at the beginning, so I think most people assumed it was part of the performance. Then someone started shouting for house lights to come up, and the cast swiftly left the stage. We sat waiting for an update. During that time, people weren't really sure whether to move or stay. After about 10 minutes, someone came on stage and said everyone had to evacuate immediately, but they had no mic or anything, so it was very hard to hear." Another audience member, a British Army officer, who attended the performance but likewise did not want to be named, added, The audience were initially confused, as people first thought it was a plot device that was part of the show. The rest of the audience were finally asked to evacuate the theatre, and so the closing night dramatically ended with no applause for the cast. Another audience member said, "Right at the end, the house lights turned on. We all thought that was part of the show, but it wasn't. The cast left the stage really quickly, and then we all left." Patients in pain can now access more urgent care thanks to an increase in dental appointments. Around 10,000 additional urgent slots have been made available in Oxfordshire, along with Buckinghamshire and West Berkshire, since April 2025, as part of 68,000 total urgent appointments delivered since then. Anyone in need of urgent dental treatment can call NHS 111 to be assessed and book an appointment, even if they are not registered with a dentist. Dr. Lalitha Iyer, Chief Medical Officer of NHS Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West, BOB, Integrated Care Board, said, "It's important for people to know that you don't need to be registered with a dental practice to access urgent NHS dental care. These services are there for anyone who needs immediate clinical help for issues such as dental pain, infection, swelling or trauma, and not for routine checkups. If you think you need urgent dental care, the best first step is to contact NHS 111, either online or by phone, where you can be assessed and directed to the most appropriate service. The appointments are part of a national rollout of 700,000 extra urgent dental slots across the country. Urgent dental symptoms include severe toothache, dental abscesses, broken or knocked out tooth, significant mouth or facial swelling, bleeding in the mouth following a dental procedure or an injury that doesn't stop by itself but can be self-controlled using local measures, and fractured, loose or displaced fillings causing pain. Patients do not need to be registered with an NHS dentist to use this service. Dr. Nilesh Patel, principal dentist at Haddenham Dental, said, "We know how important it is to local people that they can get urgent dental care when they need it, so we're pleased to be offering these extra appointments. The appointments are for urgent dental care only, so please check the list of eligible conditions. The public is reminded not to use these urgent appointments for routine dental issues or general checkups. NHS 111 call handlers will assess symptoms and, if appropriate, signpost you to book an appointment directly with a nearby dental practice. More information on urgent dental services, including a list of participating practices, is available on the Stay Well website. People can also visit the NHS website for guidance on urgent dental conditions and instructions on how to access care. Common urgent dental issues may require follow-up visits, which could incur additional costs depending on the treatment needed. The expanded capacity aims to address ongoing challenges with dental care access and ensure that patients in need of immediate attention can be treated swiftly and safely.
A proposal for a new graveyard burial meadow has been planned by the City Council for a site on the edge of Oxford. The application is for a piece of land in Oxford Road Horsepower, in the Oxford Greenbelt, which is in use as agricultural land next to Horsepower Athletics and Sports Ground, to be turned into a new graveyard. It would have capacity for 120 burials per year over the next 40 or 50 years, Oxford City Council wrote in its application to South Oxfordshire District Council. Plans are put forward as a low-impact, landscape-led meadow with burial use, which maximises benefits for ecology. The application, prepared by the Environmental Partnership, or TEP, a sustainable development consultancy, on behalf of the City Council, said, "The burial ground will have naturalistic appearance, avoiding straight lines, minimising benches, signs and hard access. Headstones will be limited to 80 centimetres in height and they will be made from non-glossy stone or hardwood. Of the 120 burial spaces per year, 33% would be allocated to adult Muslim burials and 7% to child Muslim burials. Then 57% would be for adult non-Muslim burials and 3% would be for child non-Muslim burials. Visitor parking would be provided through the pre-existing council-owned 150 spaces in the car park in front of the athletics trap, with a new footpath linking the car park to the meadow. A new access point for hearses, maintenance vehicles and 3 disabled parking spaces would be provided." Householders living in and around Botley Road are being warned noisy nighttime work will continue as contractors prepare to install a new rail bridge. The replacement of the bridge at the start of the month is part of a £237 million network rail scheme to improve Oxford Station and boost capacity on the network. As a result of the scheme, the road has been closed at the rail bridge since early 2023, and it is not due to reopen to traffic till the end of August. The new wider bridge will enable an additional rail line to serve a new platform under construction as part of the station expansion. Rail passengers are being reminded to plan their journeys carefully from Sunday the 1st of February to Sunday the 8th of February, as an amended timetable will be in place with rail replacement services in place between Didcot Parkway and Oxford and between Banbury and Oxford or Didcot Parkway. Overnight work started on January the 19th and will continue till Saturday, January 31st, from 8 p.m. till 4 a.m. to prepare for a temporary pedestrian diversion through Oxford Station. This diversion will be in place from February the 1st to February the 8th, while the current walkway between Botley Road and Frideswyde Square is closed to allow the replacement of the rail bridge to go forward. In Roger Dudman Way, work will be carried out on the emergency ramp outside Platform 4 access gate to make this accessible during the walkway diversion. And resurfacing work will take place to widen the footpath at the southern end of Cripley Road and Roger Dudman Way. Traffic management, including two-way traffic lights, will be in place to keep road users and pedestrians safe. Network Rail said in a statement, "This work needs to be carried out at night, when there are fewer road, footpath and rail users, in order to ensure the works can be carried out safely while minimising disruption as far as possible. There will be some noisy work when existing walls or curbs are removed and some noise from work vehicles. While we have mitigation measures in place to reduce the impact as much as possible, the nature of this work means that some noise cannot be avoided. We apologise for any inconvenience while this essential work takes place. From February the 1st to February the 8th, rail replacement buses for Banbury or Didcot Parkway will depart from the long stay car park in Beckett Street, limiting the number of available car spaces." Great Western Railway station manager for Oxford, Billy White, said, "This new bridge over Botley Road is really important investment in the long-term future of Oxford Station and for the city as a whole. During this period, replacement road transport will be operating for Banbury or Didcot Parkway from the long stay car park on Beckett Street. At Didcot Parkway, trains will still be running between London Paddington and Cheltenham, South Wales or Bristol, as well as services for the South Coast."
The property market has seen a boost in activity from families upgrading and first-time buyers. Parker's Properties, which has branches in Witney and Aynshan, reported nearly 130 viewings in January, a 40% rise compared to the same period last year, and a dozen homes sold subject to contract, surpassing the total for January 2025. Brendan Kay, Managing Director of Parker's Properties, said, "There is no question that confidence is returning to the property market, This is partly due to recent interest rate cuts and inflation holding reasonably steady. These are always important factors in giving home movers the confidence to push ahead with their plans. He said a change in sentiment followed the festive period. Mr. Kay said, "Since we returned to the office after the festive period, the mood has shifted, particularly among those families seeking to upsize and first-time buyers looking to get in on the first rung of the property ladder. We have seen multiple offers on some properties, which has helped to generate the best possible value for sellers." Mr. Kay attributes the rise in activity to several key factors. Mr. Kay said, "We are confident that the strong start in January will continue into the spring, when we typically see a spike in homes being launched onto the market." The estate agent also reported negotiating an average increase of £20,000 from the initial offer to sale agreed price.
A new clinical study has been launched to investigate whether insulin levels influence how women with the most common type of breast cancer respond to treatment. Oxford University Hospitals, OUH, is one of 32 hospitals participating in the study and is expected to begin recruiting patients in the coming months. The TransEndoNet study will examine the relationship between insulin levels and the response to aromatase inhibitors in women with estrogen receptor positive, HER2 negative, HER plus HER2 breast cancer. It has been funded by a partnership between the UKRI Medical Research Council and the National Institute for Health and Care Research. ER plus HER2 breast cancer accounts for the majority of breast cancer diagnoses, particularly amongst postmenopausal women. In these tumours, estrogen is a key factor of cancer growth, binding to cancer cells and promoting their proliferation. Aromatase inhibitors, such as letrozole, tackle this by lowering estrogen levels. They are given as standard of care treatment for 5 to 10 years following surgery for early breast cancer to reduce the risk of recurrence. However, growing evidence suggests that metabolic factors, including insulin levels, may influence how well patients respond to hormone therapies such as aromatase inhibitors. Type 2 diabetes and elevated insulin levels have been associated with a higher incidence of breast cancer and increased breast cancer mortality. Laboratory studies have also shown that high insulin levels can activate a key biological pathway known to drive resistance to hormone treatments, while lowering insulin levels appears to inhibit this pathway and improve treatment response. It is estimated that around 1 in 3 adults over the age of 50 may be affected by insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome, raising important questions about how metabolic health interacts with cancer treatments. TransEndoNet is a sub-study of the Phase 2 EndoNet trial of women with early stage ER plus HER2 breast cancer who have been through the menopause. The EndoNet trial, conducted by the Surgical Intervention Trials Unit at the Nuffield Department of Surgical Sciences, is investigating the clinical benefit of giving part of the 5-year course of aromatase inhibitors prior to surgery with a view to shrinking the breast cancer to see if this reduces the extent of surgery needed. Some 250 people are participating in EndoNet in the UK, and patients joining the trial will now have the opportunity to participate in both studies. TransEndoNet will use patient samples collected during the main trial to investigate the link between insulin resistance and aromatase inhibitors. Plans for a playground to be built in Oxford City Centre have moved a step closer after it was formally included in the City Council's upcoming plan. Campaign group Oxplay set up a petition to build a permanent playground in the city centre in late 2024, which has gained more than 2,000 signatures since then. Oxford City Council discussed its draft local plan for 2045, which sets out which sites in the city will be used for housing, employment and other uses, in a lengthy meeting on January the 26th. The Green Group proposed an amendment to the local plan to ensure that the principle of having a playground in the city centre was part of the plan. The City Council previously passed a motion supporting the principle of a playground and put £60,000 towards a feasibility study in last year's budget. Green Councillor Rosie Wrong said at the meeting, "As highlighted by community campaigns, the absence of playgrounds in the city centre means that children do not have a free, safe and secure environment to play, which is a barrier to families spending time in the city centre." Others argued against the amendment. Independent Councillor Ajaz Raymond said, "I think we're just placing a straitjacket on developers in the city centre where it's really expensive. We have lots of amenity spaces in the city centre. I think that if adults are responsible and organise themselves a little better, they can come up with a family arrangement that would work." Ultimately, councillors voted to include the amendment in the local plan. A spokesperson for Oxplay said, "We are delighted that the City Council saw fit to amend the local plan to provide for a city centre playground, and we thank the council for their support. We believe that this will be good for children, good for parents and good for businesses, as well as creating a new hub in the city centre." They added that the arguments against ignore the first-hand experience of those who signed the petition. A number of pop-up play centre play spaces were set up in the city centre last summer. The Green Group also put forward an amendment to ensure that there was no net loss of playground space across Oxford in the context of increasing pressures for development, but this was narrowly voted down. Other amendments to the local plan include making an explicit mention of pubs in the policy to protect existing cultural attractions and venues from development, ensuring that no developments have lower cycle parking requirements than under the existing local plan for 2036. A last-minute amendment from the Independent Oxford Alliance to remove Iffley Meadows from the list of sites allocated for housing was voted down by councillors.
Here is a brief summary of businesses opening and closing in our area. A Cornish bakery cafe will replace a popular chain coffee shop in Oxford, giving customers even more choice in the city centre. The new cafe and coffee shop will replace one of the two Pret-a-Manger stores in Cornmarket Street, reducing the mega chain's number of shops within the ring road to just five. Described as a taste of Cornwall wherever you go, the bakery offers pasties with a range of fillings, plus pastries from other parts of the world like croissants, tortilla, scones and sausage rolls, speciality coffee and other drinks. The countdown is on as an opening date for the Lego store of Oxford's Westgate has been confirmed. Lego announced in December that it is to open a new store at the shopping centre, and it would be the popular toy store's 22nd UK store. A spokeswoman for the Westgate confirmed the store will be opening in early May. It will be Oxfordshire's first and only Lego store, despite selling products inside shops such as Toys R Us and supermarkets. High-end frozen food brand Cook has submitted plans to open a new store. The award-winning frozen meals and puddings retailer has submitted a proposal to the planning authority to open a new shop in Upper High Street, Tame. Then closing. A long-standing family-run furniture shop near Whitney closed at the weekend as the owner decided to step away from the business. Homely Furniture to Go in Bryce Norton Road, Minster Lovell, near Whitney, hosted a closing down sale on Sunday with last-minute bargains and a free drink on offer for customers as it ceases trading in person. Business owners have assured patrons that this is not goodbye, as it will remain open for orders online and over the phone. It will now be continued by the same family as Mr. Curtis retires, but switching to an online and over-the-phone model. Pettits of Wallingford, one of the oldest and largest businesses in the market town, announced on Saturday that it will be shutting down one of its shops. The trio of shops, originally a department store founded in 1856, will shut Pettits Laundry Shop in 1-3 The Arcade in the town centre on the 25th of March this year. The ladies' fashion shop and menswear shop, both in St Martin Street, will remain open and unaffected by the lingerie shop closure. And finally, a nursery has said operating is no longer sustainable as it announces its closure with regret. Pupils at Duchess Nursery in St George's Road, Wallingford, will have to find new places after March as the school is closing down. It announced on its website that the nursery would shut on Friday the 27th of March. A statement said, "It is with regret that we announce this."
A shocking police rooftop standoff saw panic on an Oxford street, with part of the city put in lockdown as a major 999 operation unfolded. There was a huge police presence in Cowley Road, with at least 8 police cars, a police helicopter, and around 20 officers reported at one stage. A worker at a local pizza shop said residents and workers on the streets were panicking when the police force first arrived at around 3:30. He said there was panic. A lot of people were panicking and asking, "What's going on outside? What's going on?" Many then watched as a man was said to have jumped across shop rooftops while the police surrounded the area. Initially, Thames Valley Police asked that the public avoid the area as the officers engaged with the man on a rooftop. A police spokesperson said officers are currently at the scene of a concern for safety incident in Oxford. Nobody has been injured and officers are engaging with a man on Cowley Road. There is no threat to the wider public, but we ask that the public please avoid the area if possible at this time. Later, around 5:15, the force confirmed 3 arrests had been made and they had left the Cowley Road. A police spokesperson said, "The incident has been resolved safely and officers have made 3 arrests." There were no further details released in connection with the 3 arrests made by the police. An Oxford Brookes University student, who was not to be named, said, "We saw a man on the roof of Kebab Kid. It looked like he climbed out of a window onto the roof. Then he started running around the roof." Gary Winkfield, who is the owner of Powell's Design and has been trading on Cowley Road for 40 years, said he had never seen such a large police presence before. Indeed, there was a larger police presence than at a recent incident on Cowley Road on the night of January the 26th. That involved 6 police vehicles and an ambulance and led to the arrest of a 35-year-old man on suspicion of common assault and the possession of a Class A drug. Mr. Winkfield, 40, said, "I have never seen it like this with the police cars. Something different that you don't see every day. Shops continue to trade and delivery drivers continue to collect food from the large number of takeaways on the road during the incident." 3 of Oxford's star chefs will be hosting a one-night-only public supper club in the city centre in support of maternity services at the John Radcliffe Hospital. Known as the Silver Star Supper Club, the event will take place on Wednesday, the February 11th, for a 3-course dinner designed both as a fundraiser and a new kind of social experience for the city. It will see the St Anthony of Padua Church Hall, beside the John Radcliffe, transformed into a candle-lit dining space with shared tables, live jazz and high-quality food. Sharon Victory Canu, engagement officer at Oxford Hospital's charity, said, "We wanted to create something genuinely special for Oxford, not just a fundraising dinner, but a welcoming third space where people can gather outside of work and home, connect over great food and music, and support an important local cause. It's the kind of shared social experience we feel is deeply missing in Oxford, and we hope this supper club becomes a night the city looks forward to. In a rare collaboration of three of the city's prize chefs, the event will bring together distinct culinary worlds from a top hotel and university colleges for a new addition to the Foodie City's cultural calendar. Kieran Munday, head chef at Treadwell and the Store Hotel in Broad Street in Oxford, will serve up a starter of cured salmon tartare, the store gin, goma dressing, radish and sea herbs. The main course will be crafted by the All Souls College kitchen team, led by sous chef Eva Welshelberger and chef de partie Ryan Cole. Ms. Welshelserber brings experience from fine dining restaurants like the Savoy, the Dessart and Coots Bank, and together with Mr. Cole will prepare slow-braised beef rendang with coconut rice and winter greens, or a vegan alternative of oyster mushrooms with rice and greens. Dessert will be created by Donatella Incingolo, head pastry chef at St. Edmund Hall, who trained in classical patisserie in Rome, and will serve dark chocolate Basque cheesecake with sour cherry compote and chantilly cream. Money raised at the fundraising event will go to Silver Star, the maternity fund of Oxford Hospital's charity, dedicated to supporting those charities at the John Radcliffe Hospital. It provides funding for specialist equipment, service improvements and care enhancements for mothers and babies at the hospital. The evening is open to the public and aimed at locals in Oxford, food lovers, solos, couples or groups. Tickets are limited to maintain an intimate dining experience and early booking is encouraged. More information at tickets at www.ticketaylor.com/event/silverstar 198530 5.
The County Council has issued a warning after Union flags were raised near the city's Crown Court. England and Union flags were hung in central Oxford overnight on Saturday and Sunday, 24th and 25th of January. They were hung on posts from Folly Bridge by the police station on St Aldate's to Speedwell Street, near Oxford Crown Court, as well as round the corner and up behind the Westgate. Oxfordshire County Council has issued a statement in response to these new flags in Oxford with a warning over road safety. A spokesperson said, "As a council, we proudly fly both the Union Jack and St George's flags. We also welcome residents displaying flags on their own property. However, placing flags or painting them on or near highways can create serious safety hazards. These include reduced visibility for drivers, cyclists and pedestrians and increased risk of distraction. To keep everyone safe, our teams have been removing flags and other unauthorised attachments from streetlights during routine maintenance or when they pose an immediate risk. With the current darker, windier and wetter weather, these risks are increasing. We therefore are stepping up the removal of flags and other unauthorised items."
A transport company boss has appealed for free park and ride bus travel to continue for the duration of the city's congestion charge. Bus travel from the park and ride network in Oxford was made free for an initial 3-month trial period following the introduction of the congestion charge on October the 29th, and this discount was then extended till the end of March. In the past, drivers using the park and rides would have to pay for parking and also bus travel. Oxford Bus Company Managing Director Luke Marion has called for the free bus travel deal to be extended till the end of August, when the Botley Road is due to reopen at the rail bridge and 6 congestion charge points in the city are due to be replaced by traffic filters. Mr. Marion said, "It's fantastic that free park and ride travel will be continuing for a further 2 months, but the next step must be to make it permanent for the duration of the congestion charge. The first 2 months of Oxford congestion charge saw a 44.6% growth in park and ride journeys via Oxford Bus Company services, with the free bus travel scheme extended in January for a further 2 months. Customers with a valid parking ticket for any of the 5 park and ride sites located around the Ring Road can obtain a free return ticket to any Oxford destination by showing their parking ticket to the bus driver. Mr. Marion added, "Oxford has suffered chronic congestion problems for too long. However, change has slowly but surely started to arrive. The County Council's temporary congestion charge is a bold approach to tackle the issue head on, and the early signs are encouraging. Since the congestion charge came into force, we've seen reduced traffic on Abingdon Road, allowing smoother and more reliable bus journeys. We know the visitor economy is crucially important to Oxford, so it's essential that our city centre attractions and hospitality businesses are able to give clear guidance on the congestion charge to potential customers looking at visiting over the busy summer season. That's why the city needs clarity on the medium-term future of free park and ride. All surpluses from the congestion charge scheme are ring-fenced for local transport initiatives, including improving public transport." Andrew Gant, the County Council's Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "The Council is currently considering how income from the temporary congestion charge can best be utilised after March 2026. We have been clear that the offer is in place to the end of March, extended from the original 3 months, to allow us to monitor usage, income, effect and other matters over a reasonable period of time." Independent City Councillor David Henwood said, "The free bus travel arrangements should be extended until the end of August and beyond." A fast same-day care is keeping patients out of overnight hospital stays and easing pressure on a busy emergency departments in Oxfordshire. Ambulatory Assessment Units, AAUs, provide rapid assessment, diagnosis and treatment for patients who do not require admission to hospital. AAUs are located at the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford and Horton General Hospital in Banbury, and the John Radcliffe unit is led by Raymond, Deputy Matron. In 2024, the units treated nearly 21,000 patients through Oxford University Hospitals. Raymond, who has worked at OUH since 2001, said, "No two shifts are ever the same in ambulatory care. We see a wide range of patients every day, all with different needs, concerns and conditions. Our job is to assess people quickly and thoroughly so they get the right care without staying in hospital any longer than they need to. The AAUs are designed for same-day investigations and treatment. Teams routinely perform diagnostic tests such as ultrasounds and blood tests to support rapid clinical decision-making. Point-of-care testing is central to the AAU approach, delivering results in minutes rather than hours." Raymond said, "This has been a real game changer for us. Having results almost immediately means we can make decisions faster, start treatment sooner, and give patients clarity about what's happening." He emphasised the broader impact of ambulatory care in helping to relieve pressure on emergency services. He said, "We are making a difference. For every patient treated in our units, that's potentially one less patient waiting in one of our emergency departments. We all know that emergency departments should be kept for those who genuinely need them, and they're often busy, noisy spaces, which some patients may struggle with." He's also passionate about minimising unnecessary hospital stays, particularly for older patients. "There are risks to long stays in hospital, such as infections and pressure ulcers," he said. "The majority of people want to recover surrounded by their home comforts, not on a ward. We have an ageing population who can require frequent medical care. Sometimes that will be a genuine hospital admission, but at other times we're able to mitigate some of these risks with quick and efficient treatment." He added that reassurance is a key part of patient care. He said, "Patients often arrive at hospitals feeling uncertain and worried. Being able to explain to them how we're going to care for them, carry out any tests quickly, give them answers can make a huge difference to how they feel, especially when they're informed about when they can expect to go home.
Dinosaurs are returning to Oxfordshire for a week of prehistoric fun. Fairy Tale Farm in Chipping Norton will host its Once Upon a Dinosaur event from the 14th to 22nd of February, featuring hands-on activities, life-size dinosaurs, and a full programme of themed trails, crafts and interactive experiences. Nick Laister, founder of Fairy Tale Farm, said, "Once Upon a Dinosaur is always a highlight of the year, and we're thrilled to bring it back for February, half term, with even more to see and do. No special tickets are required."
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 074 96 06 2280. That's 074 96 06 2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website at www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspaper skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.